Today, the Commission faces, once again, a historic decision affecting free speech, where it must decide whether to be guided by facts or by fears. For literally years, this Commission has struggled in a highly politicized environment through Democratic and Republican administrations to strike an appropriate balance in its media ownership rules. Many have argued that this proceeding is about the core of our democracy, and I agree. And nothing is more fundamental to democracy than following the rule of law as given to us by Congress and as interpreted by the courts. Our success will ultimately be judged not by a public relations assessment, but by the rigorous demands of judicial review. It is a heavy responsibility, and I believe we have exercised it well. I began my review of the FCC's media ownership rules with three inescapable realities: the Telecommunications Act of 1996, the judicial decisions interpreting it, and the U.S. Constitution. First, the Act requires the Commission to conduct a review every 2 years to determine which of our broadcast ownership rules can be justified in the modern world of media. For those who want us to delay this proceeding, I cannot do it. In fact, we are already 5 months behind schedule and therefore unfaithful to congressional intent. Second, judicial decisions in this area have been struck down. Every broadcast ownership rule that the courts have reviewed has been struck down since the passage of the 1996 Act. Each time, the courts found the FCC had failed to justify the limits that it continued to place on broadcast ownership. So for those who want the Commission to maintain all the rules in their current form, you're asking me to defy the federal courts. This I will not do, nor should you want me to. Third, the First Amendment to the Constitution protects the rights of free speech and free press and tells me that in my capacity as an FCC commissioner, I cannot tell the American people what they should believe, what they should read, what they should watch or listen to, or what they should do in the area of their own home when it comes to media. Any restraint placed on broadcasters' free speech rights must be a reasonable means to further our public interest goals. The federal court opinions specifically tell me that any restrictions we place on ownership must be based on concrete evidence, not on fear and speculation about hypothetical media monopolies intent on exercising some type of Vulcan mind control on the American people. Within these parameters, I want to emphasize that we have undertaken an enormous study of the reality of the modern broadcasting marketplace. We have accumulated a record of unprecedented breadth and depth, including hundreds of thousands of public comments, 12 independent studies, and testimony from a number of broadcast ownership hearings. Based on this review, we are retaining some rules and modifying others. We've tightened our definition of radio markets to ensure that it more accurately reflects the level of competition in these markets. Second, our television ownership rules continue to maintain the prohibition of mergers among any of the top four stations. Third, for such other matters as restriction of local television ownership, the national television cap, and our cross-ownership rules, we've preserved structural limitations in revised forms. We've modified these restrictions because not only do the former rules fail to promote competition, localism, and diversity, they may actually be harming these goals, as was just explained by the Bureau in its presentation. Now, those who oppose our decision will continue to fear a mythical media monopoly that will descend upon our media landscape without any regulatory review of its power. But the reality is that under today's order, there will continue to be hundreds of channels into the American home in the average American city or town. The reality is that we are continuing to impose a national network ownership cap in recognition of the important role affiliates play in promoting localism, competition, and diversity. The reality is that today's orders will prevent media companies from owning more than one of the top four stations in a market and will similarly forbid consolidation to fewer than six voices in the market serving the vast majority of Americans. Democracy and civic discourse were not dead in America when there were only three to four stations in most markets in the 1960s and the 1970s, and they will surely not be dead in this country when there are, at a minimum, four to six independent broadcasters in most markets, plus hundreds of cable channels and unlimited internet voices. Those opposing today's order have also emphasized that four companies air programming that is chosen by approximately 75% of viewers during prime time. To me, the critical fact is that these providers control no more than 25% of the broadcast channels in the average home, even apart from the Internet and other pipelines. Given these other viewing options, I can only presume that this means that Americans are watching these providers because they prefer their content, not because they lack alternatives. It would be anathema to the First Amendment to regulate media ownership in an effort to steer consumers towards other programming. And by the same token, concerns about the degradation of broadcast content do not justify government manipulation of consumer choice. Degradation is just an elitist way of saying programming that one does not like. While I support adopting prophylactic regulations in the interest of ensuring that consumers have ample choice, as we have done today, I refuse to pour 1 ounce of cement to support a structure that dictates to the American people what they should watch, listen to, or think. The central tenet of today's decision is balance. As I have said, we have undertaken the affirmative steps to retain limits on ownership where they can be shown by actual evidence to promote competition, localism, and diversity. We have resisted merely hypothetical fears. In the process of reaching this balance, we have also taken some additional steps. First, I was concerned that allowing an entity to own more than one television station in a market could decrease the amount of children's educational and informational programming available to families in those communities. I did not want to see the amount of diversity of such programming diminished if stations that are commonly owned in the same market simply rerun the same programming. Accordingly, I'm pleased that we've clarified in this order that commonly owned stations in a market must air distinct children's programming to comply with our rules. Second, the order also leads the Commission down a path of providing more opportunities for small businesses, many of which are minority and women-owned, and the order restricts the transfers of most existing combinations that fall out of compliance with our new rules unless the purchaser is a small broadcaster. In doing so, we're creating new opportunities for participation in broadcasting without threatening diversity or competition in these markets. And third, I'm also pleased that as part of our package of decisions released today, we will be issuing a further notice of proposed rulemaking to explore opportunities to advance ownership by minorities and women in broadcasting. And furthermore, I commend the chairman and his formation of a federal advisory committee to assist the agency in creating new opportunities for minorities and women in the communications sector. It goes without saying that none of us wants to see media ownership concentrated in the hands of a few. While reasonable minds can differ about which particular restriction might best promote this goal, national ownership caps that vary by only 5 percentage points or a minimum of 6 voices versus 8 owners of local television stations in a market and so forth, we should recognize that these are in fact issues on which reasonable people may disagree. For me, given the rules we adopt today, the breakneck pace of technological development, and the ever-increasing number of pipelines into consumers' homes, it's simply not possible to monopolize the flow of information in today's world. Indeed, the fall of communism in the 1980s and of military dictatorships in the 1990s demonstrates that diverse viewpoints cannot be suppressed even by authoritarian governments, much less by private media companies. We have preserved core values today by maintaining safeguards to protect against undue concentration. We've altered rules as necessary to respond to the dramatic changes that have occurred in the marketplace since the adoption of our media ownership rules many years ago, and we've provided a rigorous justification with an exhaustive study based on facts, not fears. Sometimes the facts have led us to strengthen our restrictions. Sometimes they've led us to relax them in part. But in all cases, our decisions have been based on the record. That's what Congress statute requires, that's what the courts require, and that's what the First Amendment requires. And I want to thank the Bureau for all of their hard work, and I also want to thank all of the public for all of their input. It's made a difference and ensured that we have crafted a well-balanced, thoughtful decision. Thank you.